I need to speak to Caesar!
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. And this weekend we are talking about A Long Way Down, Affluenza, and the big one of the weekend, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. We are going to start the chat by not jumping into a movie and introducing everybody. I'm Perry Nemiroff.
I'm Christy Pachko from Cinema Blend.
And I'm Angie Hahn. I'm replacing Ed Douglas, who I hear just did a great job while I was gone.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ed, you look different. Let's just keep this a running joke throughout the rest of the show. All right, so first movie of the night, Long Way Down. Angie, this one's yours.
All right, so Long Way Down is a movie based, it's a dramedy. It's based on a book by Nick Hornby, and it's about four people who meet at, well, it's about four different people who don't know each other, but they all have the same plan on New Year's Eve, which is to commit suicide by jumping off the top of this really tall building. But since they all run into each other, they get to talking, they don't kill themselves, they make a pact that they're going to try to stay alive till Valentine's Day, and, you know, over the next 6 weeks, they become friends, and it's all warm and fuzzy and stuff. It's a movie that I thought the cast is really good, for one thing. It stars Pierce Brosnan, Toni Collette, Aaron Paul, Imogen Poots. Those are the main four. Rosamund Pike is in it too. So it's a really excellent cast. It's a really unusual premise, and that's why I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't do anything more interesting with it. Like, it's, you know, it's cute, it's fun, it's light, but those are maybe not words that I wanted apply to a movie that's about four people who are suicidal. Like, not that I necessarily need this to be like a dark, harrowing experience, but it's just...
And you want the gritty reboot of this movie.
No, I absolutely do not. I hate those words. Those are like my... That's like my least favorite phrase in the English language right now. It's just that, like, I felt like something that was about... It felt like something with that kind of premise should be a little bit... have a little bit more depth to it, or a little bit more... a little bit more weight to it, or I just wish that they had gone anywhere but the most, like, predictable route, which is they all become friends and it's cute and sweet.
Well, they all become friends, but one thing I was happy for was it wasn't quite as predictable as I thought, because there's two guys and two girls, and I was like, if this just becomes, like, double wedding, everybody, I'm not going to be on board. But I actually liked it a fair amount. I mean, it's based on a novel by Nick Hornby, it's very much, like, about a boy. And High Fidelity.
It's a lot like About a Boy, in that, like, it's like another movie about, like, a sort of weird family that forms in a really unusual way, and in that it stars Toni Collette.
It's true. And I mean, like, I like that there's this idea of the family you create yourself, which is a very Nick Hornby kind of thing, and that it's dark, but it's not crazy dark, but it's not like Richard Curtis bubbly.
Didn't really feel dark at all to me. I don't know where you're even getting dark. Like, the characters say they're suicidal, but...
There's extensive conversations about why they feel like they just shouldn't live anymore.
But I don't know, maybe they didn't sell it. Like, none of them really seemed
that
unhappy.
Wow, this sounds like the biggest drag.
It was actually, that's the crazy
that's
thing.
That's the problem, it wasn't a drag. It was very uplifting and, like, cheerful, and, like, I was like, it should be slightly more of a drag. I'm not saying it needs to be a gritty reboot, I'm just saying...
I was totally just giving you shit because I know you hate the words gritty and reboot.
I know you were.
No, I like this movie. It's not very deep, I'll give you that. It's totally not deep. But I think why I enjoyed it so much is the cast is fun. Aaron Paul's kind of just his... I feel like Aaron Paul is just doing his Aaron Paul thing now, which is, like...
He's basically like a less drug-addled version of Jesse Pinkman. And
it's Need for Speed again, which I know no one saw Need for Speed, but I saw Need for Speed, and it's the same character.
I feel like Aaron Paul is just always Aaron Paul, and that's fun. He's good at being Aaron Paul because he's Aaron Paul.
But what I like about this mostly is Imogen Poots, who's also in Need for Speed, which you still don't need to see.
And who was one of the best things about That Awkward Moment, which is one of the worst things I've seen this year or maybe ever.
And she needs bigger movies.
She totally does. And that's the thing I like about this. She actually has a pretty meaty and interesting role in this. Like, she's introduced as this, like, devil-may-care party girl, but then you learn she does care about things, and she actually has a great deal of conflict in her life. And I liked watching her story. The other three stories weren't as compelling to me. But, like, she brought such a sense of energy to the movie that it never got to, like, oh, suicide. Which I know you're not into, but I liked it. I enjoyed the story. I liked the energy between the characters, and I kind of liked watching Pierce Brosnan just play like a jerk. Like, he's a has-been news anchor. Like, okay, imagine if Matt Lauer got caught with a teenage girl and got sent to prison for it. That's this character.
Pierce Brosnan's, I mean, you were comparing it to About a Boy, and Pierce Brosnan's character in this is a lot like Hugh Grant's character.
With the sex offender history.
Yes. But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm making it sound like I liked the movie less than I did. Like, it was sweet. It was cute. I wasn't, like, hating life while I was watching it. Like, I wasn't, like, unhappy with it.
Sounds like a good VOD watch.
Yeah, it's a fine VOD watch. It's a good VOD watch because it's got a good cast and, like I said, it's got a good cast and usual premise. Like, my only complaint was, and I think Christy thinks that I want it to be much darker, but that's not it. It just seems like something, a movie like this should have a little bit more weight to it. That's all, like, I'm saying.
Like, you think it's disingenuously light?
Yeah. Like, it feels a little bit too light and a little too Hollywood-y, like, you know, a little bit too, like, well, of course everything's going to turn out fine, even though these people were all contemplating offing themselves a few minutes ago.
Well, but that's what I like, is it's not so much that everything's going to turn out fine, it's that they learn the coping mechanisms to deal with what their problems are.
They all seem pretty fine by the end, like, totally fine, like, completely cured fine.
Well, one, spoilers.
I was going to say.
And two, I don't think that's entirely true. No, I think that, I mean.
You just ruined it for me.
No, what?
I'm making Harry cry. Look how sad she is now.
I have a big smile on my face now.
Wait, try again. Now Sam Perry is sad. There you go. Okay. Nailed it. Good. Yes. No, I thought it was, I totally get what you're saying. I just thought it was kind of, it was charming. And it was like, I didn't expect a whole lot from this movie. And I was excited to see Imogen Poots get to do more than be, you know, the girl the boy talks about. So.
A little more. Yeah. Okay, like, when I talk about depth, like, let me, for example, About a Boy, which we keep comparing it to, I felt like that movie had so much more weight and depth of emotion than this one did.
It totally
and that's the kind of, like, you know, that's what I mean when I say that I wish it went a little bit darker and a little bit deeper. I'm not saying I want this to be, like, a harrowing, sad drama. Was that a cat that I heard?
Dewey wants attention.
Well, the other thing is, though, that this movie, I think because it splits its narrative between four characters, is where About a Boy kind of had three, because it was the guy, the boy, and, like, his mom a little bit. I think that's part of why we don't get as in-depth into the characters or as dark as these things could get, because they're trying to keep it short, which I was thankful for. I'm really getting tired of movies being like, if I had another 20 minutes, because I don't feel like they're using the 20 minutes the way they should, which we can get.
I'll grant you that. Like, it was a movie. It was not a movie that, you know, was indulgent in terms of, like, running time, and which is more than we can say for a lot of things we've seen recently.
Transformers. Stop it.
I was talking about Transformers.
Fine.
Anyway, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't have that much to say about this movie. I'm sorry. I wish I had more to talk about it, but there just wasn't that much to it. It's like a light little confection. It's, you know, it's sweet on your tongue, and then you kind of just forget about it soon afterward. And I do mean soon, because I literally, like, just saw this right before we started recording, and I'm already just kind of like, it was there. It's cute.
You described this as cotton candy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I don't like cotton candy, so no. It's too...
You didn't sound like you like this!
I know, I'm making it sound like I like it a lot less than I thought it was fine. I would probably give it somewhere like, I don't know, like a 5 to 6 out of 10. So I didn't dislike it, but I also didn't like it that much. It was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually, I think it's sweet. I think there's things to like about it, and... You know, I totally would watch it again. Like, I liked it enough that it has character. I'll give it that. It's not great. It's not About a Boy level. But, like, it was charming.
It's, not to get too spoilery, but I did like it more than the other things we saw this week.
So. I was just saying, I was like, spoiler for the rest of this podcast.
Well, I guess it's a good transition for this one. So, our second movie of the week is a little something called Affluenza. Stop it.
Angie just said what I was thinking.
If I didn't have to give a synopsis, I probably would have been thinking or making the same noise.
Okay.
So this thing is about, it starts with, like, this main guy who's Fisher, You know, I do this a lot. Like, I make, like, little figures when I give them. I'm not going to do that right now.
It's the Great Gatsby.
He lives in Ithaca, so he's, like, not high class. Like, all of his cousin and her family who live in Kings Point on Long Island. And he decides, after his grandfather dies, to come to Long Island and hang out with her and her parents for the summer. And basically what that consists of is going to incredibly fancy parties in the biggest mansions I've ever seen in my life.
Everyone wears white.
Everyone wears white. Everyone smokes more pot than I've ever seen in my life.
Which plot point is why he becomes accepted into the circle so quickly, because he deals pot.
Because he has pot, and good pot, too. And, oh, and also because he takes pictures. Apparently that gives him an in,
with
too.
An old-timey camera.
It's not really that old-timey, though.
It's film.
Oh, it's not a film.
It's 2008.
Oh, no, yes. We know it's 2008 because this is a movie that makes the point over and over that it's 2008. It's about rich people.
When
it's
right the financial crisis happened.
Seriously. Yeah. I wonder what's going to happen at the end of this movie about rich kids.
And it's like, oh, God. Okay, so basically it's The Great Gatsby. I feel like I read that somewhere.
No, and you know what's funny is during the press day, they said it quite a few times.
I mean, because it clearly is. He's basically,
it's all over the press notes, too.
Yeah, he's Nick Carraway. He comes in. He sees all these rich people. He tries to be like them. He becomes very fascinated by this one rich guy who's obsessed with his cousin. And she's dating this other guy.
But is he even fascinated with him? Like, I didn't really understand the deal they made at all. Like, what did he do to get Greg Sulkin's character, I can't even remember their names, Dylan, to get Kate? What did Fisher do to make that happen?
All he did was invite them over at the same time, which is also what happens in Gatsby. I don't think this movie's ever trying to pretend it's not Gatsby. It is exactly Gatsby, but like set in Gossip Girl. Does sound interesting and sexy. This is the most like blandest, like laziest version of that description that I just gave that you'll ever see. Like, it kind of like hits a bunch of the Gatsby plot points, like kind of because it has to. Like Perry pointed out, there's really no reason in this version why. Because, like, Daisy character and the Gatsby character are, like, already kind of friends, so there's, like, really no reason why the other guys again, but it's, like, you know, but it's in the Gatsby book, so they have to do it. Or, like, there's, like, a scene with a car accident, which, again, I don't know, Gatsby had a car accident, so we should also have one. Like,
was a pretty dumb scene, because it did nothing for her character but make her look, like, even more of a, you know, an entitled crybaby. That was the biggest problem, is that all these characters suck. There's no reason to like any of them.
No, because, like, even in Gatsby, like, they're not supposed to be good people, but they're at least, like, kind of, like, it's, like, kind of interesting to watch their world, like, for a little bit.
It's because you're part of that world, and just, like, they're all charmed by Gatsby, so are you to a degree, and you want them to get what they want.
This Gatsby is a dick. Oh, my God.
He's not really Gatsby, though.
No, Gatsby-ish. He's like the
same alone. He throws a weird party. He has this dream girl in mind.
But I feel like they out him so quickly as being, you know, not what he makes himself out to be.
Either way, he's basically Gatsby. Well, I'm just referring to them by their Gatsby names because I don't remember.
I know they were like Fisher.
Dylan, Kate, and Fisher.
Whatever.
And
Gatsby.
The boyfriend's name was,
I don't know, he had a beard.
Tom? I think it was Tom.
It was not Tom. Tom is Tom and Gatsby. It was not Tom. Oh, it's Todd.
Todd. All right, I had the
whatever. I'm still going to call them by their Gatsby names. So the Gatsby in this one is such a dick. Like, there's one scene where someone's dad just died, and he just starts screaming at the person and being bratty and, like, being a complete dick to that person for no reason.
Oh,
and then because this is Gatsby, there's a scene where the Nick character is like, oh, Gatsby, you're too good for these people. And I'm like, is he, though? Is he at all?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. He kind of seems like he's the worst and the most dickish and most obnoxious out of all of them.
Well, also in Gatsby, like, I'm going to talk about the book because I don't like either of the movie adaptations. Just throwing that out there. But
I like the other movie adaptation, or the Baz Luhrmann one. That one I enjoyed. That one was at least kind of entertaining and had a little bit of...
I hated that. Anyway, it's fine. Whatever.
Anyway.
But the point is, you're supposed to be able to, like, understand at least on some level why he's so fascinated by Daisy, and Nicola Peltz is so boring. Mm. All she does is look pretty or yell. These are her modes. And it's like, now I've seen her in three different movies and Bates Motel. I feel like I'm qualified to say, like, I'm done. Like,
she also only has one facial expression. Her face can only do one thing. Like, can I just look not interested in anything?
Yeah, I don't think this movie asked her to do it.
I kind of look like a deer in headlights.
I haven't seen as much of her work as Chrissy has, but again, it's interesting.
Last Airbender, Transformers 4, Affluenza, and Bates Hotel. And in all of these, she essentially plays like a pretty girl that occasionally screams. Less so than Last Airbender because no one has an emotion in that movie.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the movie just doesn't give her anything. It's kind of like Transformers. I'm like, I don't know if the movie just doesn't give her anything to do or if she has zero talent. Because
I don't think she can use that excuse because I think that the other actors can use that excuse, but they actually breathe life into it. Their characters
into Affluenza?
Their characters aren't particularly well-developed. I don't care about them. I don't think they have an arc whatsoever, but I mean, I believed they were who they were.
Are you kidding? I could not tell the male characters apart. The one that's Fisher, I could tell apart because he has curly hair, but then, like, the Gatsby and, like, the Tom and, like, all the other rich kids, I was, like, anytime one, there was literally one scene where, like, Nick, like, wakes up and then, like, Gatsby is there, and I was like, oh, wait, who's that character? Have we met him? And this was, like, 2/3 of the way into the movie. It was like,
I definitely didn't have that problem because I found them all to be incredibly cliche. Like, they point out one striking feature about each one of them and then just replay that over and over and over again.
I think so, one of them had a mustache.
It's actually kind of hard to forget about them.
One of them had, like, a beard, I think. I feel like
that beard, like, came and went away. Like, he got scruffier as the movie went on. Maybe that's, like, to him.
Yeah, he went through a lot, guys.
It made me really, really, really wish that the director had done...
That's so sad, because it's like, you can't act that, like, a lot of shit happened in your life.
You need a depression beard.
It made me wish that the director had just, like, given everyone a different hair color. Because that would have just helped me out so much if some of them were blonde.
It would have been more interesting if they had just started swapping roles, like, halfway through the movie to be like, see, we're all interchangeable douchebags. Like, that would have been amazing. But no, it's the Great Gatsby, but, like, minus the sex appeal, minus, like, the nostalgia, minus the stakes.
Was there really any, like, sex scenes, actually, now that I think about it?
No, yes. I mean, there's a scene where they're in the pool, and then this girl, who I guess is the Myrtle character, but in this one, she's also kind of Jordan. No. I don't even know. But whatever. She's, like, she, like, takes her top off, so you see her tits.
That wasn't a real sex scene.
Oh, and there's a weird scene. This is not a sex scene, but there's a weird scene where Daisy is like, oh, Nick, if we weren't cousins, we'd be such a great couple. And I was like, whoa, what is this? What is this? I, like, imagined, like, if like, I had that interaction with, like, any of my cousins and was immediately just like, no, 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 that's so gross and so weird.
I feel like I was reading this in the notes or somewhere else that, like, she also comes to appreciate him, and I wasn't able to track that in the movie at all, how she feels about him. You know, I mean, for that matter, I wasn't able to track how she feels about anyone.
I wasn't able to understand how anyone feels about anyone, like, you know, in the...
And, like, what did they learn? What was the point of all this, really? It's
nothing.
Like, let's just watch them all have fun and then take it all away for a reason.
But it never comes
what
together.
What statement? And, like, none of the characters changed. No one learned anything we were able to see, at least.
I think they actually lay out the mission statement in the beginning where he's like, this isn't the start of something. This is the end of something. Like, some, like, rich guy is, like, telling Nick that. And that I think that's the mission statement because throughout the movie, you know it's set in 2008 because, like, every time that you're not watching the kids doing something, you're watching, like, a TV of, like, Obama talking about the economy and about how it's 2008 and how about the market and such and such and such. Like, this is a movie that just really beats you over the head with it. And that way, it reminded me of that other movie that I didn't like, Killing Me Softly, which was another movie where every time there was any dead space, they'd be like, let's fill it with Obama talking about the economy just so people understand that this is about the American dream. I don't think people get it. We have to do it more.
You know, this might have been a lot more fun if it had taken the Baz Luhrmann Gatsby route where, you know, that movie had its problems, but I still had fun watching the party scenes and experiencing that life.
Yeah, exactly.
I could not help but judge these kids from beginning to... I mean, like, I hated them from beginning to end.
Yeah, I wanted nothing to do with them. And also, it's a really ugly-looking movie. Like, it's shot in such dingy digital... I don't understand.
Which is really sad considering the really beautiful locations.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's so dingy looking. Like, I mentioned to my husband that the digital looks so bad, and he's, like, trying to give it the benefit. He didn't watch the movie. I wouldn't do that to him. But he was like, well, maybe they were trying to shoot it, like, in era, like the Coen brothers when they used specific stock. I was like, I think you're giving this movie way too much credit. I just think it's bad digital. It's just ugly and murky looking. It's dingy.
And just, like, there was no color in this movie. No. It was just very blah looking. Yeah. There was nothing interesting to look at ever.
I'll tell you right now, no matter what device you're watching us on right now, this is better quality.
Even though my face is completely blown out right now, this is
but
better.
But look how well lit Christy is.
Exactly.
Yeah. This movie.
I'm so glad this made it into the episode.
I wish that this movie had gone the more Gossip Girl route and just, like, kind of embraced how silly it is, because that would have been fun to watch if we were just like, we're going to be, like, a melodramatic, over-the-top,
yeah,
like,
version. Yeah, maybe if they were a little more aware of the fact that they had all of this and it was absolutely crazy how they were behaving, but nobody really recognizes that. I mean, I guess that's the point of the character Fisher, but he... You know, when you're not connecting to him, how can you connect with that concept,
really? It feels like
there's,
like, it almost feels like it's trying to do a Sofia Coppola thing, where it's, like, trying to show us what it's like to be these wealthy kids.
Yes, I think that's what it's trying to do.
Yeah, but, like,
yeah, but, you know, I like the bling ring.
I like Sofia Coppola.
That was fun to look at, fun to experience.
Yeah.
Sure, nobody learned anything. None of the characters changed, and
but
all
I'm
that
saying
same nonsense.
Fans. I think this is attempting that, but she has an insight into this culture that I don't think this filmmaker has.
That movie also has a pace that this movie doesn't have either.
Oh, God,
that's
movie.
Got like a beat to it. This is just like
it's
let's
just
move
like,
from one party to another. And
yeah,
like,
it's just
oh,
like
what
a
do we
really
do today?
Bad long episode of
the. It's also because like they don't have any purpose. These kids, they really just like do
Did
the
you
same
just
shit every day.
To the OC.
I'm saying, like, a really bad, like, I'm saying, like...
No, okay. No, even at its worst, the OC was a million times better. How dare you, Christy?
Let me restate. If, like, a couple of high schoolers got together and watched a few episodes of the OC and said, we could do that, that's what this movie feels like.
Thank you. That one I can live with.
All right, so the consensus on this one, I mean, I'm obviously saying pass.
Yeah,
don't waste your time, don't waste your money, because I don't know if you guys know this, but the economy's not great right now, so none of us have money to waste on this movie.
Ouch. Pull quote right there. All right. The big one of the weekend. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Christy, it's all you.
Oh, right. I'm doing this one. Okay. So Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I brought up the credits on my phone.
Oh, please. You don't need to. I can name all the apes. I can name all the apes.
Okay, so Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is the sequel to Rise of the Planet of the Apes and the prequel to all the other Planet of the Apes movies. And in this one, Caesar has broken ties from humanity. He has set up shop and society in the wilds of San Francisco. And humanity, as the introduction tells us, has mostly been wiped out by a simian flu, which I think the apes that escaped with him had. Is that right? Am I right?
I think
that's implied.
I could have used a refresher, to be honest, of Rise of the Planet of the Apes before seeing this, but I
probably should have as well. But I mean, it's fine. The movie doesn't really need you to know that. So... He has set up a society, and some humans stumble into it, and it's like, oh, snap, humans still exist. And they have to decide, both the humans and the apes, what does this mean for them? Because the humans need access to something in ape land, and the apes are like, hang on a second, we don't know if we can trust you. And this is the back and forth. Because Caesar is like, humans aren't all bad. I had a nice human. His name was James Franco. And Koba, who was, like, seriously screwed up from all his time with humans because of human work, as he calls it, which is, like, all the experimentations he's covered in scars, understandably doesn't trust humans. And so he's, like, very much trying to prove his point of, like, we can't trust these people. And that's basically the starting point of the movie. And then it goes into, as you've seen from the trailers, all-out San Francisco war.
I loved it. No, really, they're going to shit all over it right now, but I love this movie. This was the summer blockbuster that I wanted. I will admit there's some logic issues. I think the human characters are completely one-dimensional, but this is the kind of movie where I'm willing to just overlook any of that because it is so much freaking fun to watch, and perhaps this is part of the pet-obsessed person in me who sees these apes and just completely falls in love. Like, I want to go live in...
I just want to point out, I don't think you're supposed to think of them as pets because I feel like the whole point is that they're, like, people.
Okay.
So you're right. Doing
that
this wrong,
kind of,
girl.
I will say, no, I'm, like, likening it to my affection for animals. Because, really, in that situation...
I don't think that's my problem with it. I like the apes the best. I think the apes have the best developed characters. I think their arcs make way more sense for the most part. Angie, I think, will get into one of the problems that we found in this movie. But, like, the human characters, one, are parallels to all the ape characters where you're like, I am the ape that doesn't trust humans. And then Gary Oldman's all like, I am the human that doesn't trust apes. And because they've set up all these parallels, there's literally a parallel for like every human character. We keep repeating beats where like you'll have the ape go like, I don't think we should trust these humans. And then they cut to Gary Oldman being like, Jason Clark, I don't think we should trust these apes. And it's just like, we get it. We understand. You guys are the same thing. We get it. And it just makes the movie very long. And like, I liked the ape scenes. I was bored to tears anytime one human was talking to another human because they are so thin
that
and strong.
That was so rare, though.
I felt like I was just
that
bored.
That happened.
What, humans talking to humans?
Well, I mean, except in their compound in San Francisco.
No, there's like Ethan Clark talks to Gary Oldman a few times. He talks to Kerry Russell a few times. Kerry Russell,
Russell talks to McAfee.
I still feel like people. Probably 60% of this movie involves apes, and maybe just 30% is only human and human.
That's but fine, saying, but I want to say that, like, maybe Christy just found the people on people action boring, but personally, I thought that I just was bored by the whole thing, and I felt it was weird because I was having this experience of like watching this movie, and like I was like, I get what they're going for, I like what they're going for. I am glad that this is a movie that's trying to be a little bit smarter and like deeper and more interesting than your average summer blockbuster has to be.
I thought you were gonna say another movie where humanity has just had it.
I wanted everyone to die so that I could move on with my life, but that's a whole other thing. And I thought that the movie was actually pretty, you know, it's pretty competent. Like, it looks pretty well made. The actors do, you know, as well as they can with what's asked of them, which unfortunately is not always very much. You know, Andy Serkis puts in another good performance, but my problem with it is that they had no personality whatsoever. Like, despite all the elements being there, it just felt just so bland to me. Like, nobody really gets fleshed out beyond, like, you know, Jason Clark is kind of the noble one. Kerry Russell is kind of nurturing. That's what we know about them at, like, you know, within the first time that we meet them, and that's what we know about them at the end. You don't really learn anything about them. You have no sense of who these people are, so you have no sense of why you should care about them. And I would argue that that also extends to the apes, who are very one-dimensional, with the possible exception of Caesar. I don't know. It was... And without
I had a lot more fun tracking the apes than you did, because, yes, they all have their one little shtick, and they stick to it. But when you look in their eyes and at their faces, you see their wheels in their head turning. Like, that's why
sure.
I love the Sun character so much, is because they beat that story beat to death with him, you know, wanting to follow Kobo a little. But I was so incredibly engaged with wondering what he was going to do and trying to figure out what he was really thinking and who he wanted to trust and what he cared about that I didn't care. That's why I also completely overlooked the fact that the human characters essentially mean nothing. I mean, they're really kind of just there as props. I will 110% admit that. But I found the ape community so engaging. I mean, seriously.
No,
I
agree.
I walked out of that movie, and I couldn't recall. Malcolm. That's the only human name I can remember. I can name every single main ape because I freaking love them all. I loved watching them operate as a group. I cared about them all as individuals.
Well, because they also established what they wanted and what their drives were, where the human characters, it was just like, they want to survive, but then beyond that, we don't get much about their personality, except like Angie said, these kind of like, frankly, just so stereotypical roles of the man being like, I am noble and care for my son, the woman being like, I'm nurturing and care for everyone.
Yes, I mean, there's one scene really early on with them where I kind of was like, uh-oh, is the whole movie going to be like this? Where, like, he's like, I must go and, like, talk to the apes and do hero things. And she's like, oh, no, baby, I'm so worried about you. Don't go. It's not safe. And I was like, oh, God, we're having this scene in, like, the most boring way possible. Like, the dialogue was just so, like... It just,
well, especially
there's no personality or life to this at all, I felt like.
Yeah. And, like, so many of the human characters add so little to the plot, and to the point where you're just like, why are you here? Like, the Sun character, they explain at length how the mission they're going on into Ape Country is incredibly dangerous, and he's like, but Dad, I want to go. And he's like, I'm safer here than I am in the colony. I'm like, in what way have we established that you're safer with your dad in an area where all these apes want you dead? Versus the colony.
None of that ever mattered to me, though, because I came to care so much about the apes that the fact that the humans mattered, like, little
so
to nothing, didn't bother me at all.
During the human scenes, you...
I was busy... During the human scenes, I'm busy thinking about how they're their plans and what they're discussing will affect the apes.
Oof. I mean, we said that's a big problem to me. If that's like that's your only investment in those scenes.
It's not a big problem to me if I'm thoroughly entertained and enjoying the experience and caring about these characters. And I absolutely, I adored the apes.
The humans
in Perry's defense, that's more or less like how I felt about Godzilla, which is that the human characters in that were also like pretty shitty and one-dimensional and not at all interesting, but I cared enough about the other stuff. And that's why it's so weird to me that how little I enjoyed this movie, because I can understand how other people like it. Like, I can see what it's going for, and I could see that it actually got there in a lot of respects, but for some, I just couldn't find anything to, like, kind of, you know, hook into, like, personally, and, like, I couldn't find anything that made me care on, you know, a personal level about anything that was happening. And if you don't care about it, then, and it's not just the humans. Like, to me, the apes were also, like, they were marginally more interesting than humans, but I also didn't find them that much more. I mean, the conflicts are the same. Like, Koba, for example, is, he starts out, like, you know, I was like, okay, he has some potential, because he starts out kind of seeming conflicted, where he's like, oh, you know, like, he's friends with Caesar, but he also, like, he strongly disagrees with Caesar about whether humans can ever be trusted, and, you know, that's causing some tension between them, and that starts out kind of interesting, but, and I don't think, this isn't spoilery, right?
No, I think you can get into that, I think, right?
All right, well, he pretty quickly decides, but then Koba eventually decides, you know what, fuck this, I am not following Caesar on this, I'm anti-human, I just can't. And then, from then on, he goes full bore villain. Like, he starts out being, like, kind of conflicted and kind of, like, you know, there's some tension, it's a gray area, like, you kind of understand where he's coming from and you understand, like, the pressures on him, but then once he decides to turn, he just is, like, out and out, just like a sociopath.
This is a perfect example, though, of where the entertainment value of the film totally trumped script issues for me.
Okay.
Because with Koba, he is freaking frightening. Like, that scene where he attacks those two guys in the with the gun.
Which is in a trailer.
That's in the trailer. So
that's one of the better scenes in the movie.
But, like, things like that, like, really everything he did, even if it was repetitive, which I will admit it was, I was scared by it. And I was mesmerized by it. And I was still, even though I had seen it before, always waiting to see what his next move was.
I get what you're saying. And I mean, admittedly, that's what I said about Edge of Tomorrow, where I didn't really care if the end didn't make sense because I liked the movie so much I was fine with it. But, like, what I found it disappointing, because for me, the Planet of the Apes movies, the apes are usually the more interesting element, and I'm fine with that. But, like, I was sad to see the apes lose their humanity. So, like, this ape loses humanity so quickly, because he was a very interesting character. And then, like Angie said, they, like, hit this switch, and all of a sudden you can't connect to him anymore. And
it's the same thing that we saw in, like, Amazing Spider-Man 2, where, like, you have these villains who are like, should I be good or evil? You know what? I'm going to be evil, but not just evil, but, like, full-on, balls-out, like, crazy evil. And you're just like, that happened real fast.
Yeah. This escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to admit that Koba turns into a tyrant.
Wouldn't have bothered me so much if I felt like we got there. I really wish this movie's script had focused more on the apes and less on the humans, and we could have had that arc. I think that would have been way more satisfying.
The story is very black and white. I feel like everything is either one way or the other. Like, each character, they either want to make peace or they want to make war.
Yeah.
And there's really no one that's in the middle. But again, I criticisms aside, I was entertained by this movie from beginning to end. I absolutely adored the ape characters. I really felt for them, and that kind of just influenced my entire experience with this movie. I don't care about any of the flaws. This is my favorite movie of the summer. I was thoroughly entertained, and I love it. I want more of this.
All right. Well, I think it's a competently made movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think a lot of people will enjoy it. I know a lot of people will enjoy it because most people I have talked to like this movie way, way more than I do. I just wish this movie had more personality. I wish that this movie had ground to a screeching halt for 10 minutes so we could talk about rape laws in Texas, you know, for example. Just like to have something that was like, oh, okay, that was an interesting choice that you made, because the choices just didn't feel that interesting to me.
I have to say, I think there are some fun choices. Like, for instance, one part where I think it's in the trailer too, where you see a ape on a horse with dual machine guns.
That should have been way more awesome than it was.
I'm not gonna.
By the time that actually happened, I was like, nope, I'm done with your movie. I'm bored.
I wanted this movie to
be
tighter and more about the apes. And honestly, like, because I like the old one so much, and I'm not saying Dawn or Rise, I'm saying, like, way back, like, I just expected there to be a little more, I mean, personality, I guess, is really the best word. I think it's okay. I know most of the other people we saw it with really loved it. They were more on Perry's side, so Angie and I are kind of the odd ones out on this. But I don't know, man. I really like the earlier ones. This bummed me out. It was a disappointment for me.
All right. I loved it. I just want to sneak that in.
That's the last word.
You know, I wanted to say it so badly.
Yeah, I gotta say, the three movies this week, if I were gonna say pick one to watch, I'd go A Long Way Down, and that's not a huge recommendation because I just liked it. I didn't love it.
No, I'd 100% say Dawn, Planet of the Apes.
I would. I feel conflicted because I feel like
just
Dawn is actually a better movie.
It out.
I feel like Dawn is actually a better movie, but I had more fun with Long Way Down.
All right. So that's all the time we have for this week. You can catch Popcorn and Prosecco all over the place if you like us. We are on iTunes now, so go there, watch our episodes, and be sure to comment and star us, rate us, because that really helps, and we would really appreciate it.
And subscribe!
It. That, too. And also, we are on popcornprosecco.com, Twitter at popcornprosecco, and obviously on YouTube as well, popcornprosecco. And then all three of us are all over the web. Angie, you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter. I write all over the place, but if you follow me at decadentcriminals.com, you'll get the highlights.
And you can catch all my writing at littlemostcritical.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemiroff. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you next week.
We've been through hell together.